Can't Wait for Christmas is a proud member of the Christmas Podcast Network.
Hey, buddy, what you doing?
Is it Christmas yet?
No, sorry, not yet.
I can't wait for Christmas.
Yeah, I can't wait for Christmas either. In fact, let's celebrate now.
Welcome to the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast.
It's April 25th, 2024, and that means there's 8 months left until Christmas. Today on the show, we'll be talking about... Wait, what does it say? This can't be right. It says I'm going to talk about Christmas shoes? I am?
No! Why?
Anyway, we'll also tell you how to get some tropical Christmas magic anytime, and Robert from the Behind the Bells podcast dropped by to give us his favorite depictions of the North Pole. Okay, let's start the show! Welcome, Yule Believers, to the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast, the podcast all about Christmas history, Christmas traditions, Christmas media, and everything else Christmas. I'm your host, an elf who definitely does not want to be a dentist, Tim Babb. So, despite the fact that we only have 3 segments today, we have got a full show. So let's jump right in with our first segment, We Need a Little Christmas, now!
We need a...
So a few weeks ago, I spent Easter in the lovely islands of Hawaii. Specifically, I was on Oahu. And while I was there, I got a chance to visit with my cousin Heidi, who lives on Oahu. She took me and my wife on a walking tour of Waikiki Beach. That's when I discovered a little place called the Waikiki Christmas Store. It's a little shop that's open all year, and they sell Hawaiian-themed Christmas ornaments. Plus, they will personalize your ornaments while you wait by adding your name to them. So the next time you're in Waikiki, be sure to stop by.
Wait. Your Christmas Now tip is to fly all the way to Hawaii to see a Christmas store? Do you honestly think most people can do that?
Not at all, imaginary listener. It sounds kind of like Kermit the Frog.
My name is Carl!
In fact, if my mom hadn't given us this trip as a Christmas present... Thank you, Mom. I doubt we would have been able to do it. But if you happen to be in Waikiki, you should definitely check this place out.
Okay, but what if you're not in Waikiki?
Well, they have a website, Santa's Pen, where you can order their stuff online, or even just browse. I have to say, I wasn't even planning on buying anything when we stopped in the store, but then I saw that they used to have another store on the island of Maui, but it was destroyed in the fires last year. So the Waikiki store has several Maui-themed ornaments, and more than half of the proceeds of those sales go to the staff at that former store. So, long story short, I now have a cute sea turtle wearing a Santa hat and a pineapple on a shell, and it's hanging in my office Christmas tree. I'll put a link in the show notes to their website so you can get a little Hawaiian paradise and Christmas at the same time. And now it's time for our countdown feature, 5 Golden Things.
5 Golden Things.
All year, I'm turning my countdown feature over to the other talented and merry hosts of the Christmas Podcast Network. Last time, we had Glenn from the Seasons Eatings podcast on, and if you haven't heard our March episode, I highly suggest you check it out. I think you'll find it delicious. But don't go anywhere yet, because this month, we are lucky enough to have Robert from the Behind the Bells podcast, and he really went above and beyond and produced this whole segment with music and everything. So without further ado, take it away, Robert.
Merry Monday, everybody. I'm Robert Nicholas, the Behind the Bells podcast, the show in which I go behind the scenes into how those classic Christmas movies and TV specials were made. Home Alone, Elf, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, The Ref, Ernest Saves Christmas, Holiday Inn. These are just a few of the movies I've covered. I also do Almost Christmas episodes in which I take a regular movie that has a moment or two of the holidays just to see how close it is to becoming a Christmas film. I've even done a couple of top 10 lists. But today, I'm doing a top 5 list. So what are we looking at? Something that happens to be a big part in how we see Christmas. We all have our favorite Santas and favorite elves, and maybe even our favorite toys. But what about the main command itself, the North Pole, the place at the top of the world in which Santa calls home? a place that many on Google Earth will see as a barren snowscape. A place that can sometimes be a large cabin, or quaint village, or even a hidden metropolis, depending on the story. We've all had our own ideas on what Santa's village could look like, but today, I wanted to explore some of the best portrayals of the North Pole. Which do I think is the closest to what I wanted to see as a child, and maybe now? Which one gives me the most Christmas feels? Which one feels like something an immortal man would call home in order to generate the toys for every child around the world? I'll say now that a rule I'm following is that it needs to actually be at the North Pole. It can't be some ambiguous random magical place called Christmas Town like in The Nightmare Before Christmas. It can't be a false one like the North Pole within the TV movie The Night the Reindeer Died in Scrooge. And it also can't be set on top of the moon instead of the North Pole, as shown in the 1959 Mexican movie simply titled Santa Claus. It has to be at the North Pole itself. With that noted, keep your hands and arms inside the vehicle at all times. Let's go for a ride. Let's look at the top 5 portrayals of the North Pole.
Number 5.
Santa Claus the Movie. Let's kick it by going for something more traditional and a little old world. Santa Claus the Movie was the 1985 film produced by the same team of the Superman movies, the Salkinds. They essentially wanted to create an origin story to the man in the red suit, similar to how they did so for the DC superhero. But unlike Superman, which was a major hit of the 1970s, Santa Claus the Movie is very complicated. It's hard to defend it as a genuine good movie, but it has grown over time to become a guilty pleasure. It's like a 1980s time capsule if the things that went in there were from a team of producers from Europe and Mexico that thought they knew what kids would like. In that sense, it's fascinating. My deep dive episodes go into more detail about its history, but it gives you kind of a better understanding of why it was made when it was. The movie itself is all over the place and pretty forced, but there is good in it. One of those things is the North Pole. When I think of those old children's books that my grandparents had me read each December, this is what I think of. This is a North Pole in which everyone lives in the same building. It's like an ice castle on the outside, acting as if it's concealed by a glacier, but the inside is more like a log cabin mansion. To me, it resembles a giant cuckoo clock with a lot of wooden structures and wooden machines. It's as if the place itself is one giant toy. It's clear that the elves, or the Wendigum as the movie calls them, have been waiting for centuries for a chosen one to arrive to help serve the work of the elves and the endless toys they make. Once Claus arrives, they know that the time has come and a portal opens to a kingdom on the top of the earth. This gives the place more of an ethereal kind of charm. It feels like a storybook come to life. Plus, I have to give credit that this is one of the few North Poles to show us an environment that's mostly night. The moonlight allows the ice and glacier to sparkle more, and it oddly makes this cold environment more warm. I could care less if it's inaccurate. It just makes the place much more magical. The North Pole in Santa Claus the Movie is probably the closest we'll get to an old-fashioned kind of North Pole.
Number 4.
Elf. So moving into the next level is something more keen to the Rankin-Bass style of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Elf is essentially a big tribute to those specials and asks, what if a human was raised here? Elf was the little movie that could of 2003, beating out other family movies like The Cat in the Hat and Looney Tunes Back in Action. It gave both Will Ferrell and director Jon Favreau their big breaks. It also crafted a new holiday film that was palatable for all audiences. Kids can laugh at Buddy the Elf's antics and running around New York, while parents can bask in the more nostalgic tone that it takes. Writer David Birnenbaum wanted this to have the same tone as the Rankin-Bass specials he watched as a kid. It's a good thing that Jon Favreau kept the tone. While the movie is mainly set in New York, Elf spends a good amount of time at the North Pole, where we see this unique home of Santa. we have something more like a mountaintop resort. Instead of one structure, we have various cottages. Some are the toy factories, and some are home to the elves. But where it has a step up above Santa Claus the movie is that we get an understanding that this place is more like an established town. It has a school, a town hall, and a lake for ice hockey matches. There is even a basketball court where Will Ferrell, well, has an unfair advantage, his height. Unlike Santa Claus the movie that had the elves more like little people that are just slightly shorter, these elves are more exactly what you think of when you think of elves. High-pitched voices, smaller builds, think more like 2 to 3 feet, and pointy ears. To make another connection to Rankin-Bass, the outfits are the same ones in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. The North Pole can look fake, but that's completely intentional. It's supposed to look like something from a stop-motion special, even though there's clear humans. Well, first, that doesn't stop from stop-motion snowmen, puffins, and even narwhals from appearing. Second, because the movie is committed to this choice, you do feel very immersed within this North Pole. The fact that this was all built on sound stages while New York was shot on location creates a bigger separation. It's easy to see why New York City could feel like a planet. But it's also easy to see how human that this North Pole would come out like an alien himself. But that just makes it funnier. The North Pole of Elf is so retro, it seems like no one would want to emulate it. Perhaps it helped create the identity of the movie that most would assume someone copying it would just be stealing it. Maybe that's how Elf really did something that made it its own thing.
Number 3.
Rise of the Guardians. Ah yes, this DreamWorks animated movie from 2012 is very underrated. It may have not kicked off a franchise like the company had hoped for, but the story of Jack Frost joining the other holiday icons, protecting the dreams of children, still makes for a good Easter movie. Maybe I should have thought about putting this in my top 10 Christmas movies for the summer. Well, never mind about that. So going from a town and elf back to one structure you think would be a step down. It's putting everyone into this half-mountain, half-fortress. This Russian Santa works with these elves that look more like goblins and yetis to build toys. It seems standard until you get a real look at his fortress. This is a North Pole that not only looks humongous, but it looks like something out of a fantasy novel like Lord of the Rings. It has a sense that it was built within the mountain, and everything had to be worked around. Santa's office that has ice sculptures, to the woodworking stations that are placed within the walls of the mountain, to the main command post. It's not a modern computer, but rather a mechanism just made of wood that charts the dreams and fantasies of children. This gives our heroes more of a superhero appearance, but one that's actually been working for thousands of years. It's also a tad darker, which can give this North Pole more of an intimidating and, well, even scary look. It's almost like the North Pole that Santa Claus the movie could have been made into had the movie been produced a couple of decades later. But the point of the Rise of the Guardians was to show that holiday icons can be renegades. They don't have to be cookie cutter images or look cute. It never feels manipulative, and you do get a sense that they wanted to create more depth for Santa, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, the Sandman, and of course, Jack Frost. If they need a place to call home, this is the North Pole I can see them working in.
Number 2.
The Santa Claus. This shouldn't come off as a surprise for a millennial like myself. But the Santa Claus brought new light to the idea of what a North Pole is capable of. For the sake of exploration, we're going to include the sequels and the Disney Plus streaming series. So, why the Santa Claus? On the surface, once Scott Calvin and his son make it to the North Pole, it seems like something that could have come from, well, any other Christmas story. I mean, we do actually see the pole of the North Pole before their sleigh descends into the elf labyrinth. We do see a place that looks magical, but what starts the separation are the elves. They look just like children. As we learn from elves like Bernard and Judy, they only just look like kids. They're actually really old and have technically been around longer than Scott. But they still look up to him to fill the pants to be the next Santa. They still need that chosen one to fill the duties of delivering toys. Within the first movie, we see a large, nearly Baroque building that looks like the main hub of operations. We pass the specific toy rooms and the reindeer stables. It only gets bigger when we get to Santa's bedroom that does have a viewpoint. There's a large metropolis where all the elves work and live. It's not until the next movie in the TV series that this is expanded on. It seems like the whole place itself is hidden under snow and ice to keep it secret and isolated. But it doesn't have the same intimidating feel as Rise of the Guardians. The Santa Claus is absolutely trying to make the place look more whimsical and enchanting. We see European-style buildings and cobblestone streets looking like a larger fantasy land. Well, it makes sense that given Disney produced it, it might as well look like something from an animated Disney movie. Like Rise of the Guardians, we also get the sense that the other holiday icons will show up to play their part. Within the streaming show, we even get the other holiday icons like La Befana and Krampus. This only builds a larger scale on how much magic really plays a part in this world. The North Pole of the Santa Claus feels like the product of one trying to modernize the Santa Claus legend while following all the rules of what he needs to have. Reindeer, milk and cookies, and all cultivating to the one night he makes his annual trip around the world. This is the kind of place I would love to see as a walkthrough at a Disney park.
Honorable mentions!
The Polar Express. It's a neat design, looking like a factory town, though I'm not a fan of these elves. The Christmas Chronicles. I love Kurt Russell's Santa Claus. What I don't love is this North Pole. It has the European look, but definitely feels like it's ripping off the Santa Claus. Fat Man. This probably has more of an ordinary home and workshop vibe, while still having the fantasy element. It's unique, it just needed a little more.
Number 1.
Arthur Christmas. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Arthur Christmas is an amazing movie. I love the story, the wit, the acting, and just how much this puts me into the Christmas spirit. I love that it makes me want to be closer to my family. I love that Arthur himself is a likable dweeb that we can root for. I love how much this makes me want to give. This is an annual Christmas canon watch that I look forward to every year. The North Pole not only is everything that I want out of a North Pole, but it's somehow made it better. Yes, it's at the top of the world, and we even see a neat shot of the North Pole itself with various flags of people that have made it there. We even hear the voice of a girl who asks why can't she see Santa's workshop when she looks on Google Earth. But below the surface is where we get the real picture. We have an underground facility that was built around the ice, but it's been modernized to meet the demand of the world's children. We see that it's large enough for its factories, its living quarters, and even a garage for a Starship Enterprise-like sleigh. Yep, this is a Santa that delivers from a spaceship. Well, sort of. Arthur Christmas establishes that the only magic is that of the Claus family can live for a long time. There are elves, and it is possible to make the reindeer fly. But in order to deliver to every house, there's nothing they can do about time. Hence, it's not just Santa. It's his army of elves that'll go in tactical style to ensure that no child's been missed. So home is going to have to be equipped to prepare for that. This North Pole feels like what would happen if Apple was given the responsibility. I mean, how else are the elves supposed to monitor the night's events from a command center that looks like NASA? Everyone has a computer, even an additional smartphone called a handheld operating homing organizer. A ho-ho. But this isn't just a technological haven. No, it's also everyone's home, depending on how they want things. Unlike the command center, which is slick and clean, Arthur's office is cluttered and full of Christmas decorations, reflecting his absent-minded nature that has good intention. He's responsible for answering Santa's letters and does everything to give a magical answer about his father. If anything, I would love to see a prequel of some sort. I would love to see how this North Pole looked before its clear expansions. The best we get are the stables of the reindeer, which look more like the wood cabins of the older Santa Claus stories that they showcased. Maybe at one point, this North Pole did look like the one from Santa Claus the movie. Arthur Christmas takes the winner as the best portrayal as the North Pole because it took the most chances and gave me something different while never forgetting its roots. Thank you again, Tim, for giving me this chance to read off a top five. I'm Robert Nicholas of the Behind the Bells podcast, and you can find my show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Merry Monday to all, and to all, a good day.
Thank you, Robert. That was quite a list. If you'd like to hear more of Robert on his podcast, Behind the Bells, I've put a link to it in the show notes of this episode. Now, switching gears, let me tell you the secret about hosting a Christmas podcast. I get to have fun talking about the stuff I love. Maybe not everybody wants to talk about Christmas in the middle of the spring, but here in my Christmas cave, I can flip on this mic and just ramble on and on about the holiday that brings me so much joy. But, full disclosure, that's not the only thing that brings me joy. Yes, I love celebrating the things I love, but sometimes I also enjoy ridiculing the things I dislike. And there are few things I dislike more than...
Hold on!
What is it?
You know, a lot of other people listen to this podcast, right?
Well, that's uncharacteristically generous of you to say a lot.
Not everyone dislikes the same things. What if you alienate the listeners who like the thing you dislike?
I mean, it's all going to be in good fun, you know, like a roast.
But shouldn't you at least try to see things from the perspective of the people who like it? Actually do your research on it like you would for any other episode?
I mean, sure, I can do that. Let me just gather some research real quick. Okay, ready.
Somehow I assumed researching this show took a lot more work than that.
Oh, hush. Anyway, I am now prepared to take a deep dive into the infamous song, Christmas Shoes.
Standing right in front of me was a little boy waiting anxiously, pacing round like little boys do, and in his hands he held a pair of shoes.
Oh, wait, this is about Christmas shoes? I take it back. Nobody likes that song.
You are wrong, sir. This song was a huge hit. It was a certified gold record by the RIAA. It was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Pop Contemporary Gospel Album, and it got all the way to number one on Billboard's Adult Contemporary charts, 31 on their Hot Country songs, and 42 on their Hot 100 charts.
Oh, so everyone but you and me loves this song.
Nope. This is a famously hated song. It has been voted the worst Christmas song by multiple places, including NBC's The Today Show. It also spawned a legendary comedy routine where Patton Oswalt makes fun of it.
So it's somehow a beloved and reviled Christmas song at the same time?
Yep, it's Schrodinger's Christmas song. So I thought we might have some fun making jokes and looking back on how the song came to be.
So you think you're gonna say something today that's funnier than what Patton Oswalt said?
I mean, I'm a stand-up comic, too.
Okay, you and Patton Oswalt are both comics, like Meryl Streep and the dog from Air Bud are both actors.
Okay, that's harsh.
I'm sorry, that's wrong.
Thank you.
Plenty of people have actually heard of the dog from Air Bud.
Ouch! Come on, man! We're supposed to be roasting Christmas shoes, not me!
Well, there will probably be some people listening who actually like Christmas shoes, so I thought they might appreciate it if I took you down a peg or two first. That way we have something for everyone. People who like the song, and people who dislike it.
You're forgetting about one important group.
Who?
People who have never heard the song. And if you are listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. But you are about to be sucked in the world of Christmas shoes. First off, the band who sings the song is called New Song. That's the name of the band, New Song, which is a dumb name for a band. It's like having a football team called The Game.
Actually, Patton's bit already covered this ground.
The song is called Christmas Shoes, and it's by a Christian group called New Song, which I don't know why. Why would you name your group New Song? You're just going to be living in an Abbott and Costello routine for the rest of your life. Yeah, we got a new song. By who? Exactly. What?
Yes, well, we're bound to overlap somewhat, but let's get back to the song. It's sung from the point of view of a guy waiting in line to buy presents at a store. He's not feeling the Christmas vibes, but there's a kid in front of him in line. He looks a little disheveled, and he brings a pair of shoes up to the counter. I'll let New Song sing you the chorus.
Sir, I wanna buy these shoes for my mama, please. It's Christmas Eve and these shoes are just her size. Could you hurry, sir? Daddy says there's not much time. You see, she's been sick for quite a while, and I know these shoes will make her smile, and I want her to look beautiful if Mama meets Jesus tonight.
And this is where the divide happens, my friend. Either you're on board with this touching story right now, or you've 100% noped out like me. Why would I want to hear a song about some kid with a dying mother at Christmas? Mariah Carey was just singing about how all she wants for Christmas is me a few minutes ago. Now you got me all up in my feels like I'm watching the first 10 minutes of Up?
In fairness, people might relate to losing someone during the holidays. It happens sometimes, even at Christmas.
Yeah, people also undercook the turkey and have to spend hours in the bathroom at Christmas. I don't need to hear a carol about it. And we're only one verse and one chorus in. The madness continues when the kid plops his money on the counter, and it's all pennies. This song came out in 2000. I don't know what the average shoe price was in the year 2000, but I know in 2004 it was $39.32, which was up 1.1% from the previous year.
How could you possibly know that?
I don't know how I know that, and frankly, I don't want to know. But assuming the rate of inflation was roughly the same all the way back to the year 2000, the shoes that kid is buying probably cost around $35. You're telling me that kid came to the store that day with 3,500 pennies? That would weigh close to 20 pounds. Well, wait, actually it wouldn't, because after the cashier counts up the coins, he tells the kid he doesn't have enough. And you gotta love the cashier who is ready to deny a kid with a dying mom on Christmas.
Patton already covered this too.
Yeah, you're 6 cents short, how about that? That's not our policy here at Fashion Bug. I don't know what to tell you. That 6 cents comes right out of my paycheck. I can't help you.
Yes, you don't need to point it out every time our commentaries overlap. Anyway, don't worry about Ebenezer the cashier. The guy in line decides to pay for the shoes for that kid. Yay! Christmas is saved! The kid thanks the guy and leaves. And then we get the part that most sticks in my craw.
And I knew that caught a glimpse of heaven's love as he thanked me and ran out. I knew that God had sent that little boy to remind me what Christmas is all about.
Are you telling me that God gave that kid's mom a terminal illness just to remind this dude about the true meaning of Christmas? Seems to me it'd be way easier to just have a random TV pop on that's playing the Charlie Brown Christmas special right as Linus is giving his big speech.
Patton covered this too.
Let's review. There's a guy in line. He's a little cranky on Christmas. God looks down and sees this. Somebody in a bad mood on my son's birthday? Give that kid's mom cancer. Make sure he's in front of him in line. Make him 7 cents short for the shoes. This guy'll buy them, and then he'll be in a good mood.
Yes, I know. Emmy Award-winning comedian and actor Patton Oswalt has already made fun of Christmas shoes quite brilliantly. In fact, I'll put a link to his bit in the show notes. But beware, don't click on it with kids nearby. It is definitely not safe for work. There. Okay? You can stop bringing up the superior comedian now.
But I only mentioned it this time because I disagree with both of your interpretations of this part of the song.
Really? How so?
The implication is not that God made the kid's mom sick to cheer this guy up. The mom was already sick. But the boy and the man ended up at this store at the exact same time. The kid was going to have this interaction with the cashier anyway. And God just made sure that the man was there to see it and remember what Christmas was all about.
All right, I can give you that. But while we're disagreeing, I disagree with that buying shoes for dying relatives is what Christmas is all about. Peace? Yes. Goodwill? Sure. The birth of Jesus? Absolutely. But this whole shoes for dying people thing? #not my Christmas. And while we're on the subject, why is this kid out buying shoes when his mom might kick the bucket at any minute? Go home, kid! Mama would rather spend this time with you than wear some shoes! And where is Dad during all this? I have serious questions about this entire situation. This song has more plot holes than a Zack Snyder movie.
They did make a movie about this song.
Oh, we'll get there, but first we gotta go back to where it all began.
Wait, you're not done?
Oh no, you had me do all this research, so here it comes. You wound up the snow globe, now you gotta listen to the entire tune. So the story of Christmas Shoes goes all the way back to 1997 in a little book called Chicken Soup for the Christian Soul. It's a collection of a bunch of short inspirational stories. One of them was Golden Shoes for Jesus by Helga Schmidt. In it, a woman is at a store 4 days before Christmas. Two kids, a boy and a girl, are trying to buy these golden shoes. They don't have enough money. The woman steps in, and the kids are so grateful. The kids explain that their Sunday school teacher told them that the streets of heaven are gold, so they wanted to get their mom these golden shoes because she will be going to heaven soon. Some of the research I did for this claimed that this was based on an incident that actually happened to Helga in Alco, Kansas, but I couldn't find proof of that. But clearly, this is the same story. But the story jumped out of this book and became a big email forward that got shared all over the internet. This was back in the days before social media, where you couldn't just post something for people to see if they wanted to. You actually had to send an email to your friends and family to annoy them personally. Now, eventually, this story caught the attention of a St. Louis radio DJ, Isaiah D.C. Daniel. He read the story and thought it would make a good song, so he reached out to some friends of his, Eddie Carswell and Leonard Alstrom, from New Song. According to D.C., they spent 3 years working on the song. In the year 2000, as New Song was finishing up their decidedly not Christmas album, Sheltering Tree, the unfinished Christmas Shoes was pitched to the album's producer as a bonus track. But the producer wasn't impressed and shut it down. And if New Song had left it there, we'd all have been spared this song. But no, they ended up playing it for the record label, and they loved it. They wanted it finished and on the album as a bonus track. So after 3 years of working on the song, they finished writing, recording, and producing it in just a week. Once it's released, it starts to get airplay, not just on Christian music stations, but on mainstream radio as well. This song is a hit.
Okay, now we're done.
Nope, we have to rewind again.
What? Why?
Well, we cut back to a hot July evening in 2000, and New Song is performing a concert in Knoxville, Tennessee. Backstage is author and friend of the band, Donna Van Leer. She and lead singer Eddie Carswell got to talking about the song he was working on, and Eddie gave Donna a brief synopsis of the song. When Eddie asked if she thought the premise would make for a good song, Donna thought that the idea would make a great book. Donna immediately started brainstorming and writing the book on the way home from the concert. So now the song and the book are being developed independently, but at the same time. The song comes out first, later that year in 2000, and then the book comes out the very next year in 2001, and does quite well. So well that Donna follows it up with a second book, The Christmas Blessing, which catches up with the kid who bought the shoes, who is now in his third year of med school. But it doesn't stop there. So many more books followed. The Christmas Hope, The Christmas Promise, The Christmas Secret, The Christmas Journey, The Christmas Note, The Christmas Light, The Christmas Town, The Christmas Star, and most recently, 2020's The Christmas Table. From this one short story, Donna has created her own Christmas literary universe.
Well, good for her. Way to use every part of the Christmas shoes. But at least now, we have the full story.
Not quite.
Don't tell me.
Yes, we have to rewind again.
You're a madman!
I bet Patton Oswalt didn't dive this deep into Christmas shoes.
Probably a reason for that.
Now we're back in June of 2001. Donna Van Leer is nearly done writing her first book, Christmas Shoes, and she gives an uncorrected copy to producer Beth Grossberg. Beth cried reading it and thought to herself, this is the most beautiful Christmas movie I have ever read. So she got the ball rolling, and by the next year, they have a made-for-TV movie starring Rob Lowe and Kimberly Williams.
This Christmas, two families will test their faith in themselves.
Thanks, mister.
And discover the magic that is The Christmas Shoes.
It had the highest ratings for any CBS movie that year and the second highest ratings for any TV movie that year. This is also when New Song finally makes a music video for the song using clips from the movie. And just like the song, I have issues with the video.
Of course you do.
Between the clips of the movie, the video shows New Song singing the song in various Christmassy-looking settings. I should say, it shows Eddie singing the song, while the rest of New Song stands awkwardly behind him. Seriously, I'll put a link to the video in the show notes, and if you can stomach it, watch the other band members standing behind Eddie and staring off into space. They don't have any instruments, they aren't singing backup, they are literally just standing around looking like they are either bored or depressed, or perhaps both. None of them are even looking the same direction. One guy looks like he sees something way more interesting happening off camera. And they had to do it for a while. This song is almost 5 minutes long. You're telling me they worked on this song for 3 years and couldn't whittle it down a little? How does it take 5 minutes to tell this story? The Brady Bunch theme song tells the story of eight people becoming a family, and that bad boy clocks in with a time of less than a minute.
Okay, so now are we done?
Heck no! The movie got a sequel, The Christmas Blessing, which kinda sorta follows the plot of the book of the same name. We definitely get the grown-up little boy, but he's a full-on doctor, not a med student, and he's played by Neil Patrick Harris. They even brought Rob Lowe back for a glorified cameo. New Song then does a song called The Christmas Blessing to complement the movie and the book.
Oh no, are you going to go off on another rant about the song Christmas Blessing?
No, it's fine.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it's just a nice little song about Christmas and love. No dying moms, no jerk cashiers, nothing to complain about. But back to the movies. In 2009, they made a third movie, The Christmas Hope, to make it a trilogy. Unfortunately, it seems they didn't have Rob Lowe or Neil Patrick Harris money for the final film in the trilogy, so this time, the grown-up little kid is played by Sharknado's Ian Ziering. And there it is, the short story that became an email meme, that became a hit song, that became a hit book, that became a hit movie.
Finally! We made it to the end!
Yes. And I want to end by saying that we had a lot of fun poking fun at this song, but I know there are people out there who derive some genuine meaning and even catharsis through this song, and despite my personal distaste for the song, I think that's great. If it means something to you, I think that's wonderful, and I hope this goofy diatribe hasn't soured you on the song at all. In fact, I hope right after you finish this episode, you go listen to it at full blast and let yourself feel all the feels. And while you do that, I'm going to clear all the cookies from all my browsers, lest the algorithms out there think I want more Christmas Shoes content based on my searches of late. Because despite my cynical crust, this song makes me tear up every time I hear it. And I don't need that. Wait, no. Yep, don't play it again. No! Not the kids' choir at the end!
I want a tulip beautiful if Mama meets Jesus tonight.
That's our show. Thank you so much for listening. Check out the links in the show notes for Santa's Pen, the Waikiki Christmas Shop website, the video for Christmas Shoes, if you can stomach it, Patton Oswalt's hilarious but not safe for work bit about Christmas shoes, and the link to Robert's Behind the Bells podcast. Thanks once again to Robert for being a part of our reindeer games today. Okay, that's all I've got in the stocking for today, but until next time, Yule Believers, keep laughing all the way.
And that was Christmas 1983.
Actually, Dad, it's 2024.
Oh.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, if you leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, aka iTunes, and email us about it at christmas@tancast.com, we'll send you a free Can't Wait for Christmas sticker. If you'd like to see the show notes or leave a comment on this or any other episodes, you can go to our official website, can'twaitforchristmaspod.com. While you're there, you'll find a link to our official Zazzle store, where you can grab customizable t-shirts, ornaments, stickers, and all sorts of other Christmas-themed items all year long. We'd love to connect with you on social media. On TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, we are Can't Wait for Christmas Pod. And on the app formerly known as Twitter, we are @ChristmasPod. We wish you a Merry Christmas was performed by the United States Marine Corps Band, and this amazing version of Jingle Bells on the accordion was performed by the wonderful and talented Christian Nowicki. All other music and sounds used in this episode are the properties of their individual copyright holders, and they are used for purposes of commentary and review. No infringement is intended. Okay, boys, did I forget anything?
God bless us, everyone.
Merry Christmas!
But shouldn't you at least try and see things from the perspective of people who actually like it? Actually, do your re...
Oh, I added an extra actually. You don't need an extra actually. That you just need the one actually. Otherwise, there's too much actually, and then you've actuated. No one wants that.
Well, there will probably be some. Whoo!
The imaginary listener is getting too many lines this week, and he's going to sound less and less like Kermit the Frog the more he talks.
Well, there will.
That is a hard one. Either you're on board with this touching story, or you've 100% noped out, like me. You read a whole sentence so you know where to put the emphasis.
But I only mentioned it this time because I disagree with both of your inner... interpretations of what this song... Oh my gosh!
This isn't even the imaginary listener's long speech. This is his short speech. There's a long one right after this, and I can't get through it.